Good afternoon, brethren. Certainly a pleasure to be here. We had a very exciting week. Our youngest son, Paul, is now the proud father of a Viking. 9 pounds, 13 ounces, would you believe? Great big horse of a kid. Got the Nias head. So sure enough, they had problems at birth, and he got stuck, and he wouldn't come out. So they had some difficulties, but thankfully everything worked out okay in the long run, and he's doing well. So we're very happy to have another grandson, Joshua Anthony. So certainly has been a very exciting week for us. And we've been roaming the country. Nice to see our friends from Nanaimo following us around. So I was there 2 weeks ago. I spoke in Nanaimo there, and we met there. It was kind of nice. We had a beautiful trip. Went to the island for 2 weeks, and everything was just perfect. Couldn't have been any better. The weather was just gorgeous. We stayed with a friend right in Victoria there, and really enjoyed the trip. So, got back to Alberta, and thankfully, good to see a little bit of rain. So, certainly hope it continues for a while. Got to read you this story. It was pretty good. It says, an old man lived alone in Palestine. He wanted to dig his potato garden, but it was very hard work. His only son, who would have helped him, was in an Israeli prison. The old man wrote a letter to his son and mentioned his predicament. Shortly, he received this reply. Dad, whatever you do, don't dig up that garden. That's where I buried the guns. At 4 a.m. the next morning, a dozen Israeli soldiers showed up and dug up the entire garden without finding any guns. Confused, the old man wrote another note to his son telling him what happened and asking what to do next. His son's reply was, now you can plant your potatoes, Dad. That's the best I can do for you at this time. I thought that was kind of neat. A little bit of humor that goes along with a horrible situation that's going on over there. The problems and difficulties just seem to be getting worse. I want to ask you a question today. What is it that is going to keep God's people from being deceived? Jesus said things are going to be such that if it was possible, the very elect would be deceived. That sounds like a very, very strong case for deception, doesn't it? If it were possible, the very elect would be deceived. And yet Jesus says it's not going to happen. But what is it that stops the elect from being deceived? We'll see the answer later, if you haven't got it yet. Let's go to Proverbs 29 and verse 18. Here's a scripture that can be translated a number of ways. Proverbs 29, verse 18. The way my Bible reads, it says, where there is no revelation, the people cast off restraint. Where there's no revelation, or where people don't see what's going to be happening, people cast off restraint, but happy is he who keeps the law. And in the King James, we know it says, where there is no vision, the people perish. Perhaps this is partly why so many people have left the truth. We know over the years we've had a lot of losses when it comes to people who were attending the church. We thought were a part of the body of Christ. Perhaps they lost the vision of what it is, what's happening out there and what is going to happen. Somehow people got sleepy. Remember one of the first things that happened? One of the first things that happened was the people who were looking at prophecy were disbanded. That was one of the first things that happened as far as the heresy started, when the heresy started. It was changed, first of all, the name was changed a couple of times to make it more palatable, and then it was actually disbanded. There was a group of people, you remember Mr. Hogberg, he was doing it, and he was looking at prophecy all the time and interpreting prophecy, or at least showing us how it fitted in with world events and what was going on, fitted in with the prophecies of the Bible. And that was one of the first things that went, of course, because if Satan wants to destroy people, get their eyes off prophecy. Make them think nothing's happening. You hear the phrases, oh, it's always been like this. There's always been crime. There's always been drought, right? There's always been drought. I mean, you've probably heard it maybe in the last little while. We've always had problems like this. It's just cycles that you go through, etc., etc. Maybe that's in this case. Maybe we'll come out of the drought. Maybe we will. But there's been a vast amount of damage right now. When you see people crying on television and about the fact that they had to get rid of their cattle, their breeding stock that they've had, you know, they've used and bred for years and years and years and built up these herds, and then they've got to get rid of them. And I'm reminded every day I come down the highway or I'm up there, these loads of hay, just loads of hay. Every time you turn around, it's a truckload of hay going south because they've got nothing to eat down there. And we know they're even starting to send hay from Ontario now, trying to send it down here. I thought that's quite admirable. That's what I'd say. I'd say there better be a lot of people who should be saying thank you and maybe apologizing a little bit. You remember what people were putting on their bumper stickers when the oil prices were going up? You probably remember that. Some very unflattering terms were used about Easterners. Yet during the drought back in the 30s, you know, they sent carloads of apples out here, free of charge. Train loads. Send them out in boxcars full of apples, free of charge. You know, so I think we need to make sure that as a nation that we know what we're doing. Think about the impact of what we're saying in that. But right now, look at these things that are going on. We're in the middle of a terrible drought in our province and in Saskatchewan. Many other areas of the states are also having problems like that. Areas of the world, of course, are going through drought and famine like their normal droughts and famine. We've now had a terrorist attack in the World Trade Center, the consequent effects on the stock market. Now there's horrendous corporate deception and greed that's coming out in deception and hiding, trying to hide losses. We're seeing this failures of huge companies in the like WorldCom, and you know, you think of these, the figures they're throwing around are so far beyond anything we can even imagine. And it's quite interesting. Economic problems, morals in the cesspool, superbugs. Article on their program on TV just saying how they're going to try to battle these new superbugs that are coming out now that are resistant to everything they have. They're trying to figure out how are we going to handle this stuff. The euro is now being used by all Europeans. What's happening to the dollar going into the tank? What's happening to the euro? A year ago, if you had been smart, you would have bought a whole bunch of euros. And if I was an advisor in the financial areas, I'd say, buy euros. Just buy euros. I don't care. Buy them and hold on to them. If you've got any money, put it in euros and hold on. You know what's going to happen. It's bound to. It's almost like reading Matthew 24 when you look at the newspapers and you watch the news. So where are we today in prophecy? Sometimes it's good to be reminded some of the things that go on. It's nice to know, where are we? Where do we fit today? Let's go back to Daniel chapter 4. We'll see a very important prophecy that is said here about Nebuchadnezzar. And it's very interesting for us because it'll actually, we'll come right down to the modern day using this prophecy and showing where we are. Let's go to Daniel chapter 4. This is Nebuchadnezzar the king it talks about. And then it says in verse 10, here were the visions that he saw. I was looking, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth. Its height was great. The tree grew and became strong. Its height reached to the heavens, and it could be seen to the ends of all the earth. Its leaves were lovely, fruit abundant. It was food for all, and the beasts of the field found shade under it. The birds of the heavens dwelt in its branches, and all flesh was fed from it. So he says, I saw in the visions of my head while on my bed, and there was a watcher. That's an interesting phrase. You know, like, I think there's jobs, angels have certain jobs that they watch what's going on the earth. And then they report back to God and explain, here's certain things that would probably be important for you to look at and know what's going on. So this watcher, a holy one, an angel, comes down from heaven and he cried aloud and said, chop down the tree, cut off its branches, strip off its leaves, and scatter its fruit. Let the beast get out from under it and the birds from its branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump and roots in the earth. Interesting. What happens if you leave a tree stump? Anybody who's ever cut down a tree, what happens if you leave the stump there? We did it in my yard here in Edmonton. I was trying to get rid of this dumb tree, and we left the stump there. And it didn't matter how many times you cut off those branches that kept coming up. All these little shoots kept coming up. You just cut them off, and here they are again in a short time. And next year, here they are again. you have to kill it somehow to actually get rid of it. It stays alive. So if you cut this tree off, and you leave the stump and the roots in the earth, but then you bound, it's bound with a band of iron and bronze. In the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of the heavens. So this tree then is bound with a band, and I guess, I've never done it, but I guess if you put a good, real stiff iron band on a small tree of some sort, it just cannot grow. So in other words, this is saying, stop it from growing. Don't kill it. It's not going to die. The roots are going to be still there, but it's going to be stopped from growing. So then let's go on. Let him graze. Let's go back to first part of verse 15. Leave the stumps there bound, and then in the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of heaven. Let him graze with the beasts on the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from that of a man, and let him be given the heart of a beast. Let seven times pass over him. What are seven times? 7 years, right? Everybody knows a time is a year. Seven times pass over him. This decision is by the decree of the watchers. Now, it's kind of interesting. We also know that there is a day for a year in prophecy. There's a principle of a day for a year in prophecy. What would seven times be in prophecy? If you multiply out three, in a year, there's 360 days. Multiply it out. Seven times that, you get 2,520. In this case, we will see that this turns into 2,520 years that this stump's going to be cut off, but will be alive, but will be delayed. It's not going to grow anymore until the end of the 2,520 years, as we'll see. There's a type. This is a kind of a type that's going on. What happens, as we see, we'll go a little bit further on. And the explanation of the dream, let's go to verse 22. Here's the explanation by Daniel. It is you, O king, who have grown and become strong. This is the tree. For your greatness has grown and reaches to the heavens, and your dominion to the end of the earth. Great power. He was the head of Babylon, the great power at that time. Inasmuch as the king saw a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven and saying, chop down the tree and destroy it, but leave its stump and roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze in the tender grass of the field. Let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let him graze with the beasts of the field till seven times pass over him. So Nebuchadnezzar was going to spend 7 years living like an animal. So this is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king. They will drive you from men, your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. So God was going to humble Nebuchadnezzar, and as we see, we'll go through here, that it actually comes about. Verse 33 says, that very hour when he was walking around, kind of being a little vain about different things, that very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men, ate grass like oxen. It sounds like a dream that a man, that this really happened to somebody, but it did. And it was a type of what happens to Babylon. Seven times. So he ate grass like oxen, his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers, and his nails like bird's claws. So, pretty exciting. And then what happens? We know that if we see this, that the stump is going to be cut off, the tree is going to be cut down, that means it's going to be the end of that system for a period of time. And certainly that happens. Let's go to the next chapter. Here's Belshazzar, Nebuchadnezzar's son. The king made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in the presence of the thousands. So here he comes. He's going to have this big party. Bash takes place. But what happens? He makes a big mistake right away. When he tasted the wine, Belshazzar gave the command to bring the gold and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple which had been in Jerusalem, that the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. So as they do this, they take a drink, what happens? Verse 5. In the same hour, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and wrote opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. The king saw the part of the hand that wrote, and he just about croaks. He says, he sees the king's countenance change, his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his hips were loosened and his knees knocked against each other. I think you probably would if you saw a hand writing on the wall. He'd be saying, what was in that wine? Did somebody put something in the wine? How much did we have to drink? I would have been scared half to death, I'm sure. So after all of this, he brings in Daniel then. He knows about Daniel. He says, hey, I'll bring this guy in. He can interpret what this hand has written on the wall. So verse 17, Daniel answers, comes in. He says, let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. O King, the Most High, God gave Nebuchadnezzar, your father, a kingdom and majesty, glory. And because of the majesty he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. This is verse 19 of chapter 5. Whomever he wished, he executed. Whomever he wished, he kept alive. Whomever he wished, he set up. And whomever he wished, he put down. But when his heart was filled up, lifted up, and his spirit was hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. Then he was driven from the sons of men. And he tells the whole story about how he spent 7 years. Verse 22, he says, you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, although you knew all of this. Lessons were not learned. You have lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of his house before you. And you and your lords, your wives, and your concubines have drunk wine from them. You've praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone, which do not see or hear or know. And the God who holds your breath in his hand and owns all your ways, you have not glorified. Then the fingers of the hand were sent from him, and this writing was written. Here's the inscription. Many, many, Tekel, Upharsin. Now, it's interesting just to look at the numbers. Those have equivalent numbers when you look at those words. Many, if you go back, we can go back there and take a look at it in a minute, but many actually means the way he's interpreted here, the way he shows, he says, your kingdom has been numbered. Verse 26, many, God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. Tekel, you have been weighed in the balances, this is verse 27, and found wanting. Perez, your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. So Belshazzar then gave the command to clothe Daniel with purple and put a chain of gold around his neck, made a proclamation concerning him. So he was promoted here. Now, what is the number of these words? It's interesting because if you look at it, mene actually means it has the value of 50 shekels, and each shekel has 20 gerahs, it's called. So if you add those up, you multiply them out, that's 2,000. Many, many would have 2,000 then, 1,000 each. Tekel is 20 gerahs, it's one shekel, or 20 gerahs. Perez is a half a mene, or 500 gerahs. Guess what number it comes out to? Anybody guess real quick? 2,520. 2,520. And so it's interesting that what happened that very night then, what happens? The kingdom of Babylon actually falls at that time. And Darius, the Mede, comes along and takes over the kingdom. It says, verse 30, that very night Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, was slain. Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. So Babylon falls at that time. Now there's one event that historians agree on, and that is the date of the fall of Babylon. Most of the time, people will disagree. They'll say it's this year or that or the other. This one, actually, everybody agrees on, as far as I know. And it was 539 B.C. So it's kind of interesting. Okay, now, let's start thinking this through. 539 B.C. If it falls at that time, the tree's cut down, it's delayed then. It's not destroyed, the whole system, but it's kind of delayed. And sometime in the future, that tree is going to start growing again. Wonder when that would be. Let's go to 539 and add 2,520 years to that. What do you get? If anybody's really fast with their math, they actually get 1981. But 1981 is incorrect because there's no year zero. So you have to add a year to it. So it's 1982. Now, this is kind of interesting stuff. So if this is correct, we should look for evidence of the roots of the Babylonian system to start to grow again. It doesn't mean it comes overnight. Like the tree doesn't pop up out of the ground overnight and it's not a full-fledged tree again, is it? But if you leave those little shoots coming up, you let them start growing again, pretty soon you're going to have a tree. The whole thing's going to grow again. And you'll end up with the full system. So, did anything happen in 1982? It's kind of fun, isn't it? What happened in 1982? Well, a certain pope went to a place called Santiago de Compostela in Spain on November 9, 1982. This is supposed to be the place where the Apostle James went. There's a very, very strong tradition that he died there. Even the name actually gives that impression that it was the Apostle James who was there. All the kings since the Middle Ages have gone there for pilgrimages to this place. It's supposed to be a holy place. Now, while the Pope was there, November 9th, 1982, he appealed to all Europeans to rediscover their origins. Do you remember that? I actually remember that trip. I can remember him being there because it was actually reported in the Pastor General's report at the time. Guess what phrases he used? You should give life to your roots. That was one of the quotes of the Pope at that time while he was there. All Europeans, you should come together, find your origins, and give life to your roots. I thought that's kind of interesting, kind of coincidental that this happened in 1982, 2,520 years after Babylon fell. So the roots of the system, or the roots of Europe, if you go back, what are their roots? It's the Babylonish system is the root. Now, the Germans have tried to unite Europe twice this century. Who stopped them? Well, it was the democracies, wasn't it? The Western democracies stopped them in a battle. And you could probably try to make a case for the bands as to who were the bands, the brass and the iron, who were the bands, and when the bands were still there, they were stopped. First World War, Second World War, they were stopped. When the bands come off, I don't believe there's anything that's going to stop them this time. We're at a situation where you kind of wonder, is anything going to be able to stop them? The system seems to be rolling along. We already have the euro. That was absolutely essential to have the economic kind of power that they're going to have, was to have a common currency, because it absolutely guarantees the trade and the economic power. Now, so when he appealed them to them to rediscover their origins, give life to your roots, you kind of wonder, let's go on a little bit. What happened 7 years later on the same day? 7 years later, November 9th, 1989. Does anybody remember what happened on that day? All of you were there. Not there, but all of you watched this on TV. On that very day, the Berlin Wall fell. 7 years exactly to the day where the Pope said about getting your origins. And if you know 7 years in the Bible, the seven is a kind of a number of completion. It tends to be used that for many things in the Bible. But if you look at it then, now the legs of iron are together. You got this iron that is now together. After the Berlin Wall fell, you've got East and West Germany's back together again. Nobody expected that to ever happen in our lifetime. If you remember people saying, and I do, before that Berlin Wall came down, I can remember people saying, it'll never, ever come down in our lifetime. Maybe 25, maybe 30 or 40 years, people might forget about the war and maybe it'll come down. Nobody expected it to come down. And yet, why? Why did it come down? Because there's something very, very powerful at work, brethren. Something extremely powerful at work. It's a system that is being built. Now, 7 years after this, in December of 1996, the Adventist Church opposed a resolution which was passed in the European Parliament. Probably I don't even know if any of us even heard about it or knew about it or noticed it. But in the European Parliament, they passed a measure calling for member states to respect Sunday as the day of rest. This is a resolution in the European Parliament, and it passed. The Seventh-day Adventists tried to oppose it, tried to stop it, but they could not. All of the nations supported it. Here's what they said about it. Quote, Sunday worship reinforces family values and structure of society. So do you get the impression, brethren, that certain things are being built? Certain things are being put in place? That's there now. It's in place. If that system gains the power that we know it's going to gain, you can be sure that that resolution is going to be used. Sunday worship is in place. No question about it. Now, often things in prophetic fulfillment happen in 19-year time cycles. These are kind of all interesting things to look at. I don't think we need to all run off into the sunset or build your fallout shelter or whatever it is. But it's interesting to look at, and it's interesting to see some of the evidence that this system is being built and powerfully built. We often see in prophetic fulfillment certain things that happen in 19-year time cycles. Paul went into Macedonia 19 years after Jesus' death and preached there, moved into Europe. 1934, we know Mr. Armstrong started preaching in the U.S. And in 1953, the Luxembourg radio opened to the World Tomorrow broadcast to go into Europe, 19-year time cycles. Now, what might have happened, let's take a look at 1982 and add 19 years to that. What year do you get? 2001, last year. Now, we also believe that Babylon fell on the Day of Trumpets. I don't know, I think they can prove that. At least that's, I've seen it in the, that Babylon fell on the exact Day of Trumpets. And so, now let's look 19 years after 1982. Is there anything that happened near Trumpets in 2001? September 11th. September 11th was 7 days before Trumpets. Now, that's pretty close to being exactly on 19 years. We don't know exactly why there would be a 7-year difference or a 7-day difference, but again, it's some people would say it's a big coincidence as to what's going on here. And you can say that, and that's, if that's what a person wants to do, that's fine. But it is interesting to me, why would this be significant in prophecy? What was the target? The World Trade Center. Now, it's also interesting to me that the World Trade Center was going to be rebuilt. They tried, remember, right afterwards, they said, we're going to rebuild it. We're going to rebuild it. Then it was never rebuilt. And from that time on, what's happened with the economy? Chaos. There's been chaos from that moment on. You know if you have a pension fund, right? If you have anything in a pension fund, you know pretty fast that there's been chaos and lots of trouble. Now, I believe there's a reason why it was the World Trade Center and why it wasn't rebuilt. And the reason is the World Trade Center is going to be somewhere else. It is not going to be New York City. So it's just a matter, as far as we can understand, a matter of time. And God says, we look in the Bible, we see the blessing and the cursing chapters. We are under terrible curses. We've come under more and more terrible curses. I don't know if it's ever going to rebound. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But we know from looking at what's going on in the world that the trade and the power is just sort of like it's moving, inexorably moving across the Atlantic. Everything over there seems to be getting more powerful, stronger. Now, is it going to happen in 2 years? I'm not saying. I will not say that. That's not our job to worry about or to figure out exactly when this is going to happen or when that's going to happen. These things have already happened. Right? The things that I've brought out here have already occurred. It's not somebody speculating about thinking that the World Trade Center is going to be bombed. It has been. It's not going to be rebuilt. The stock markets are in chaos, in crisis. It's already happening. The euro is already rebounding from being quite low and heading upwards. So it's interesting to look at these things. Again, I'm not going to run out and build a fallout shelter, whatever it is, because that isn't going to do a person any good anyway. And I'm not going to predict any days either. Oh, when's Christ going to come back? See, the Bible says no man knows. Right? Nobody knows. It doesn't say any longer that God doesn't know. Christ, see, there was a confusion in people trying to decide, oh, he's going to come back in 19, whatever it was. You know, they went to 1972 and then added 2 and 3.5 years and had it all figured out. We can't do that. We don't know the exact year. I would guess that Christ will return on trumpets. I would guess that, just from knowing what I know about what's happened in the past. When did he die? When did he die? When did the Holy Spirit come? I would guess that Christ is going to return on trumpets, but we don't know, again, which year that is, exactly, what time it is. We might know by the time it gets close, though. We may know, because you will know when the church has gone into the place of safety. You'll know that. Once you know that, you can start figuring out exactly what's going to occur. But right now, what is our job? Our job is to look at these things and be awake. And say, hey, we are actually moving down the road. The road is like a snowball that's rolling down a hill. It's moving. The European beast power. I can remember the time when they first started in the 50s, I believe it was. I think it was in the 50s when they first started coming together. It was the European coal, wasn't it? Something to do with their coal. They got together with 6 countries and they started a common kind of working together over this coal. And I can remember that starting. I don't know why I remembered that, but I remembered that. When I first came into the church, I thought, well, that's where the beginning of the beast power. That's the beginning of the beast power, way back then. So it's kind of interesting to, you know, everything was kind of being set up for the stage of real powerful growth and a complete banding together like they have now. The European nations are tied together so tightly now with currency and with... it'll be interesting to see how it develops. Let's go to Revelation 17. We know what the system's going to be like. How do you know that this economic system is going to be so powerful and so great? Revelation 17 talks about this powerful beast coming together, and it talks about it being part of a religious system. Verse 1, one of the 7 angels who had the 7 bowls came and talked with me, saying to me, come, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. Now, what was this system? Again, this is off in the future, but being built right now. Verse 5, on her forehead a name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. And we know what she did. I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus, and when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement. Amazing, isn't it, when you see what's going on today in Toronto? You know, this big rally that's going on, and here's this, you watch people and they're talking about how this is so Christian and so wonderful and the love of God. And it's so incredible to see how people are so deceived, just so deceived. They think this is Christian and this is Jesus' love, and you know, those little kids and that sit there and they, I just saw the love of Jesus coming through his eyes, you know, as they bend down and kiss his ring and stuff like that. You know, quite amazing as to what's happening and what's going on. It's just kind of spooky in a way. It's sort of spooky in a way when you watch this system and the power that's developing and how she's going to ride on the back of this beast. And it's going to be church and state again. And that little thing where it says Sunday worship, you know, that one little thing they passed is going to be very, very significant. Very significant. Because it's going to be used. We know that as we go along. So the system, Verse 18, let's go to chapter 18. After these things I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illuminated with his glory. What's happened? He cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen, has become a dwelling place, a place of demons, a prison for every foul spirit, a cage for every unclean and hated bird. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. So it's a system, a city that reigns over the earth. Let's go back to verse 18 if you're in doubt about what system it is. The woman whom you saw is the great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. We know who it's going to be. Verse 4, I heard another voice from heaven saying, Come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, and lest you receive of her plagues. For her sins have reached to heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. So this religious system is destroyed. The economic system goes down with it. Let's go on. Render to her just as she rendered to you, and repay her double according to her works. In the cup which she has mixed, mix double for her. In the measure that she glorified herself and lived luxuriously, in the same measure give her torment and sorrow. For she says in her heart, I sit as queen and am no widow and will not see sorrow. Like, we don't have any tomorrow. There's no consequences for what we do. We know that system is going to have people in slavery. It's going to sell people. You know, we see different things that it says through the Bible. It's a horrible, horrible system. No regard for human life whatsoever. There won't be any such thing as human rights. Going to the UN to get your human rights, it's going to be gone, all that stuff. Verse 8, therefore her plagues will come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she will be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. This economic system is kind of interesting when you look at this. The economic system, and God actually describes it as coming down in one day. And if you go a little bit further, the kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived luxuriously with her will weep and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing at a distance for fear of her torment, saying, Alas, alas, the great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in one hour your judgment has come. It's almost like sitting back and watching the World Towers, the World Trade Center. The description is very, very similar when you think about it. In one hour, watching the smoke of the burning, in one hour, you come down. It was almost spooky when you read this and you think of what actually happened. Sort of like a type. Almost like a type. You know, you have a type and an anti-type in the Bible oftentimes. So here they are, you know, here they are standing there. The merchants of the earth, verse 11, will weep and mourn over her. For no one buys their merchandise anymore. It's very much to do with economics. You know what the richest organization in the world is today? The Vatican. They don't even know how much money they got. They actually don't know. There is no way they can possibly know, because how can you put a price on some of the pictures and the things that they have? You can't put a price on it. They don't even know. But it is sort of interesting that they're that economically well off, and this system is an economic system. Verse 12, merchandise of gold and silver, precious stones and pearls, fine linen and purple, silk and scarlet, every kind of citron wood, every kind of object of ivory, every kind of object of the most precious wood, bronze, iron and marble and cinnamon and incense. You can't hardly believe this when you read it. It's just like everything the world has to offer. They have everything, just abundance of it. To grant oil, fragrant oil and frankincense, wine and oil, fine flour and wheat, cattle and sheep, horses and chariots, and who? Bodies and souls of men. Slavery. There'll be a horrible slavery that takes place again. But this whole thing, you kind of watch it. No wonder they were mourning this. Let's go back a little bit. Revelation chapter 13. How did this thing all get going? What's going to be the catalyst that's going to get this system going, and you're going to have the harlot and the beast come together? What's the catalyst? We know right now, if you think about it, you know, all of the people in Europe have very, very strong roots with the RC Church. There's no question about that. Very, very strong roots. They're very closely tied together. But what's going to get this thing going? How is that going to happen? That I'm sure right now, if the Vatican walked down and said, we want to take over all of you European kings and nations, and we're going to rule you from now on, I don't think that would happen. It's not going to happen. But what does happen? What makes this happen? Revelation 13 and verse 13. Let's go back a little bit. Verse 11. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. He exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. How does he do this? He performs great signs, so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. Ah, that must be Elijah, right? That must be Elijah, because he's bringing fire down from heaven. Kind of interesting when you think about it. What's the result of this? He deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast. Remember when the fire came down from heaven and burnt up Job's property? What did those people say about it? What did his Job's comforters say about that? Well, it was all from God. Right? It was all from God. God is punishing you because you sinned. It must be from God. This miracle that took place was from God because you're being punished, Job. Because that's what normal human beings think. If they see a miracle, that's the proof. Okay? That's normal. That's a normal human way to think about things. If you see a miracle, that's the proof that it's from God. That's the way normal people think. So when this occurs, what does he then do? Verse 14, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. So this is kind of interesting because the type is there. Nebuchadnezzar, remember he made the big image? Great big image. And everybody who saw this when they played the music had to fall down to the image. The type is really quite interesting. He was granted power, verse 15, to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Quite fascinating, isn't it? Now, I said earlier, I asked you a question. Why won't the elect be fooled? Why won't the elect be fooled? It's because the elect does not use that criteria for judging as to whether something is from God or not. We don't use that criteria. If a man walked in here today and performed a miracle, we should always all ask the same question. I went and visited a friend one time, and he told me, this was an individual that I knew years ago, and he was in the church for a while, for a period of time, and he said to me, this is the type of preaching I really like. This is the kind of preaching. He turned this preacher on, and I was listening to it for a while, and of course the guy was bombastic, and he had a good voice, and he was really powerful and really speaking. And what question do you think I asked, by the way? First question. What was the question? Anybody got it? What does he teach about the law? Right? You all would have asked the same question. What does he teach about the law? And so he didn't know exactly, so I went back and listened to one of the sermon he had on the law. And when he finished listening to part of that, he said to me, "You still don't know, do you?" And I said, "No, I don't." Because he didn't say. He wouldn't say whether he agreed that the law should be enforced or that it's done away. He just waffled all around it. So immediately, what do you know? As soon as you hear that, somebody who does not teach the law of God, he is not a servant of God, not the God we know. Because God gives us that as our guarantee. That's your guarantee that you know who this guy is from and where they're from. Your guarantee. Let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 13, and we'll see that. Deuteronomy chapter 13. If there arises among you, here's the key. If there arises among you a prophet, somebody who's a real prophet, or a dreamer of dreams, and he gives you a sign or a wonder. And the sign or the wonder comes to pass. This is no fake. It's not a trick. This is a guy who can perform a miracle. He may be a prophet, maybe a dreamer of dreams. God says there are people out there who are dreamer of dreams and prophets who can prophesy and dream dreams and tell people. You've seen lots of books on them, right? Edgar Casey and all these different kind of guys who could, Nostradamus, they only write all these things down and supposedly check him out, and they say, oh yeah, he's been right on this and this and this. And there's another one around, by the way, whose name is Malachi. Kind of interesting. I heard about this from a friend who was speaking about it. And this guy is supposed to be correct. He's been correct on every pope since the Middle Ages. He's been correct. There's something about each of them that he identifies them before they come. And it's kind of interesting. Doesn't say, God doesn't say that people can't do that. He didn't say that. He said there are dreamers of dreams and there are prophets. But what else does he say? Thank God that he's given us the clue right now. He says, a sign or wonder comes to pass of which he spoke to you, saying, let us go after other gods which you have not known. Let us serve them. Then he says, that's what it is. There's the key. If he tries to take you after a different god, we know how to identify our God. We know which day his Sabbath is. That's a sign between him and his people forever. We know which days are his holy days. We know which laws are his. We've got all those things. Thank God that he's given us that. Then he says about this person, you shall not listen to the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams. It doesn't say they couldn't do the miracles. So they did do the miracles. He says, for the Lord your God is testing you to know whether you love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul. You shall walk after the Lord your God and fear him, keep his commandments and obey his voice. You shall serve him and hold fast to him. So why is it that the elect aren't going to be deceived? We know that. Somebody's going to come along and he's going to have a very powerful case, brethren. Very powerful case. There'll be, as they say, it's said about David, when Absalom was trying to take over, it says the conspiracy was strong. The conspiracy was strong. And I'm telling you, this conspiracy is going to be strong. There's going to be very, very few people who will stand against it. They'll only be the elect of God. Like Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Only three men stood against worshiping the image of the beast, or the image of Nebuchadnezzar. Only three guys. Basically, when you think about that, the numbers, pretty small numbers. And so the story. They were saved. They were saved. They had an angel come down and take care of him. So here's this individual who's going to have tremendous power. Tremendous power. It's scary to think of it, brethren. If you're not a little bit scared, I'm surprised. Because it's going to be scary. It's a scary time. There's a guy who's going to be able to do incredible miracles that's probably walking on the earth today. Very likely is on the earth today. Maybe some powerful religious individual, maybe not, we don't know who. But he's going to be doing some incredible stuff, incredible things. And God tells us, here's the key to making sure that you don't fall for that kind of thing. Listen and ask, does he teach the law of God? And there's clever arguments. There's a lot of clever arguments out there. You hear these different arguments. Well, these people are doing all that they know. They're doing all that they know that's right. I mean, why couldn't, God just say, well, they're obeying me to the best of their ability. That's a good, clever argument. But it doesn't hold water. Because God said you've got to be called and you've got to have His Spirit dwelling in you, or you're not going to be in the first resurrection. And you've got to persevere and hang on. There's an individual, I won't give you all the details on this, but it's kind of fascinating. There was a guy in the Middle Ages who was a monk, and his name was Malachi. I thought, interesting type again. There was also a prophet of God called Malachi, and said certain things, and this was going to happen, that's going to happen. This guy went to Rome, and he went with some of his other monks who were with him. He was the Archbishop of Armagh. His name is Malachi. And he went down to Rome, and he was thanking God, I guess, standing up on one of the hills of Rome, looking over Rome, and he started crying. And he started crying for quite a long while, and then he fell asleep. And one of the scribes who was with him, one of his monks who was with him, started writing down everything he said, because he started speaking in Latin phrases. Said he had something like 1,100 different Latin phrases that he repeated. And then he gave an epilogue, and then woke up. And they'd written all these things down, and they've checked them out, and gone through them all, and he's listed all of the popes. It was all done ahead of time. Listed all of the popes and wrote something about each one. Even this one, who's still the present pope, he was called the something to do with the sun, the power of the sun. And it turned around that he was actually born on the day of a solar eclipse. And so they kind of follow this through, and they give you how many popes there are, and how many more there's supposed to be, and the different signs and all this kind of thing. And it's actually fairly accurate from what it looks like. It's accurate. But you can run back and you can say, now, what does the Bible say about a dreamer of dreams? Again, you see, could be a test on people as to how they're going to react. Do they know? And even the cardinals, a lot of the cardinals in the Catholic Church today have studied this guy's writings. And there's one particular pope, or one particular cardinal now, that they think is going to be the next pope. And it's kind of interesting because he fits this certain thing that this Malachi had said. So it doesn't mean, see, that there isn't going to be somebody coming along who can prophesy. And I think we have to kind of, you know, keep this in the back of our mind. There's a few things about prophecy that might surprise us if we're not careful. Because prophecies are going to take place as we move along. I don't know how close we are to that point or not. You know, we don't know. We don't know exactly when this is going to happen. But sometime in the future, there will be people prophesying. Very likely that we know. Maybe some of our family members. You know, let's go to the Bible and look at it. It says in Joel, let's go to Acts chapter 2, verse 16. I think it's important to keep these things kind of in our minds, because right now most of us would be pretty shocked if somebody started prophesying. And yet, I titled this sermon today, Covet to Prophesy, because that's actually what the Bible says. Most of us would think, oh, somebody's gone freaky. Somebody's gone bananas. Our first reaction, right? Your first reaction would be, whoa, what's happened to so-and-so? They're babbling, or they're saying funny things like this. Something's going to happen in the future. Who, you know, would God use them? Yeah, maybe. What's the test? Everybody knows, right? What's the test? Okay, what do you teach about the law? You're going to give me a dream, you're going to be a dreamer or a prophet, you're going to prophesy. What do you teach about God's law? That'd be the first question. And if they teach about God's law, that you are to keep it, and they teach the commandments and preach so, let's take a look. Acts chapter 2, verse 16. This is what was spoken by the prophet Joel. It shall come to pass in the last days, says God, that I will pour out of my spirit on all flesh. Your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. See, it would be especially shocking for us if one of our daughters started prophesying, wouldn't it? Would God use a woman? That would be, you know, somebody's reaction, I'm sure. He'd never use a woman. Sorry. Women are going to be in the family of God. They've got a brain. Sometimes the brains are much better than us men, we men. So, does God ever use women? Yes, He's used them many, many times. And it's bad to have some preconceived thing in your mind, like, God would never do that. Rubbish. He says, your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. Your young men shall see visions. Your old men shall dream dreams. God is going to do this, brethren. I don't know when. Maybe we'll still be alive. Maybe time will go on a little bit longer, and maybe some of us will die. But sometime, and on my men servants and on my maid servants, I will pour out my spirit in those days, and they shall prophesy. And then He's going to show the wonders in heaven, etc. So, some points about prophecy. Don't be surprised as to who might prophesy. That's one good point right there. Don't be surprised as to who God might use. Because God can use anybody. He has used people in the past. Let's look at this other one. Acts chapter 21, verse 8. This might be surprising too if we didn't know it was in the Bible. If we just used our own viewpoint sometimes, or our own preconceived notions, Acts 21 and verse 8. On the next day, we who were Paul's companions departed, came to Caesarea, entered the house of Philip the evangelist, who was one of the seven, and stayed with him. Now this man had four virgin daughters who prophesied. Has God used girls before? Absolutely. Absolutely. We don't know who God is going to use. He can use anybody at any time. So God is telling us, don't be shocked, don't be surprised by who I might use. Let's look at some others. Prophecy is actually for believers. This is a good point to remember. Prophecy is for believers. The Bible shows this. 1 Corinthians 14, verse 22. 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 22. Therefore, tongues are for a sign, not to those who believe, but to unbelievers. But prophesying is not for unbelievers, but for those who believe. I could be preaching, and also could be prophesying about the future, too. Prophesying is a gift, too. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 12 and verse 9. 1 Corinthians 12 and verse 9. These are the different things that God gives out. To another faith by the same Spirit, to another gifts of healings by the same Spirit, to another the working of miracles, to another prophecy. So it's part of the gifts of Spirit that God gives out. God gives people certain talents and gifts, and sometimes in the future, we don't know, but He will probably use that same gift with someone. We know that the two witnesses are going to be able to perform miracles, but maybe even before that, God may use somebody in the church powerfully with miracles, because usually there's a type and an anti-type, right? At the end time, there's this guy who's going around, you know, making great things happen on the dark side. Maybe there'll be somebody who's doing things on the right side as well, setting certain things straight and telling people about, you know, giving people the truth so that they can make a choice. Right now, I feel like our nations haven't got a clue. They haven't even had a chance to make a right decision. They haven't. I don't believe they've even got a chance to make a right decision yet. None of those people really know the truth as to what Christianity is, the ones who are in Toronto today. They don't know what Christianity is. They haven't had a chance to really know the truth. And I think God is fair. He's more fair than to leave them in the dark and then condemn them. So I don't know what He will use, but I suspect when He starts pouring out His Spirit and people start prophesying, maybe that'll be the time when He really turns on the power and He lets everybody make an intelligent choice. This is what true Christianity is. I am a true servant of God. Maybe the man or whoever will perform a miracle and will be able to let people actually know. Prophecy is for believers. Also says in Revelation 19 and verse 10, the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. It's important to understand prophecy. Testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. Revelation 1 and verse 3 talks about the people who read these words and study the words of the prophecy are blessed. All we have to do is read it. I was thinking about it the other day because I thought, most people can't make a clue or have a clue about what Revelation is all about. You sit down, and if you sat down with many of the religious leaders of this world and said, let's go through the book of Revelation, you could tell them an awful lot of stuff that they do not know. They just don't know. They get so confused that many of them call the book just a jumbled mess. They haven't got a clue what it's really all about. We should actually, let's take a look at a couple of scriptures just to finish up here. 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 1. 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 1. Look what it says. Pursue love, desire spiritual gifts, but especially that you may prophesy. Especially. There's nothing wrong with speaking and teaching prophecy. And sometime in the future, maybe God, like I said, will use us to actually prophesy. Verse 39 there also says the same thing. 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 39. Therefore, brethren, desire earnestly to prophesy, and do not forbid to speak with tongues. There's nothing wrong with having a right attitude towards that, to want to do it if possible. There's also a caution about prophecy, 2 Peter 1 and verse 19. 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 19. A bit of a caution. While they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. For by whom a person is overcome, by him also he is brought into bondage. For if after they have escaped the pollutions of the world through the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, did I give you the right scripture? Sorry, I'm reading the wrong one. 2 Peter 1:19. I'm reading 2:19. Verse 19. So we have the prophetic word confirmed, which you do well to heed as a light that shines in a dark place till the day dawns. And the morning star rises in your hearts, knowing this first, that no prophecy of Scripture is of any private interpretation. It needs to be done correctly. A person doesn't want to take one particular thing and run off into the sunset with it. Hey, this is it. I got the. Now I know Christ. Let's all get up on the rooftops and we know when Christ is coming back. I got it all figured out. Tomorrow, let's see, 8 a.m., let's all get up on our roof. You know. Those kind of things have happened in the past, and it just makes people look totally foolish. What are we supposed to do? Don't think because you have a dream that you are a prophet necessarily. And we've all had dreams about different things. But in the future, don't discount that either. You know, a person has to understand it could be a dream from God, because they may start doing that. Maybe right away, maybe later. We don't know when. But there's a good chance, I mean, there will be good odds, strong odds, that some of us will still be alive when many of these things happen. Okay, let's conclude then. Out of all the groups that are mentioned in the Bible, remember the Philadelphians are offered protection. The prophecies are scary, kind of scary in many ways. There's things that are pretty frightening when you start thinking of what's going to happen. Yet God says the Philadelphian era of the church will be protected. Because why? Because you've persevered. You've persevered. You stuck with the truth. And it may be more perseverance than we even know. Because there could be this individual starts doing these miracles and stuff. That's going to be a strong, strong deception. Everybody around us, brethren, right today, everybody, virtually everyone in our country would fall for that. Everybody. There might be a few somewhere that won't, but I just almost doubt that. See, you know what happened there? I just heard somebody talking on the radio yesterday. This great big gathering in Toronto. There's all kinds of other groups that are there too. They're all in there too, helping out. Even though they believe different things in some cases. they're all there. They believe this is good, you know, for a religious thing, to everybody to come together. And so pretty scary stuff out there. God tells us, Luke 21, verse 36, watch, therefore. Keep your eyes open. Watch the news. Watch things that take place. See if they fit in with the loosening of the bands around the tree, where the tree is growing again. See if you can see the things in the news that actually fit in with that. What's going on here? What's going on there? Little things that take place. It's sort of like it's adding to the snowball, making the snowball bigger. Somebody's throwing extra snow on as it comes down the hill. It's picking up more speed. God tells us, watch therefore, pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. Keep our eyes open, brethren. We live in exciting times when things are happening fast. They're happening quick. Let's keep our eyes open as to what is happening in prophecy so we can always be ready.